content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Today, I shall be reading to you from three very famous Christmas stories, because this month is our favorite holiday of the year, very probably Christmas time. Christmas comes on December 25th, so here we go with some Christmas stories. Our very first one is a famous one. It is the story of the Nutcracker, and as many of you may know, the Nutcracker story has been made into a very famous ballet by a man called Tchaikovsky, who lived probably about 100 years ago, and he set this story to music and to dance. He did not do the dance part, but it has been set to his music has been set for a ballet by someone else. So here we go. The Nutcracker. This story of the Nutcracker was written by Jan Brett. Sounds like Christmas. Smells like Christmas. It is Christmas, Marie laughed. Thumps and bumps and jingling bells. I'm ready, hooped her brother Fritz. Doors opened onto a magical Christmas party. But Marie never could have guessed how magical. Not far away, Uncle Drosselmeyer was gathering the curious creations he had fashioned for Christmas Eve. When you opened the door to their big room, there was a gigantic Christmas tree, and tons of kids were gathered in there, ready to celebrate Christmas and get their presents. And Uncle Drosselmeyer was a magician, and he was bringing in all sorts of things so he could entertain the kids on Christmas Eve. And there's Mom and Dad and Grandma and Grandpa, and all sorts of people were in there, even their big black fluffy dog. And someone had brought a basket with a mother cat and two little kittens, and someone else had even brought their little pet rabbit in a basket. So here we go, the Nutcracker. Uncle Drosselmeyer wheeled in the mysterious boxes. Inside were a trickster and two harlequins. With a turn of his key, a whir, whir, and a hum, 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 they danced. The figures were so lifelike. These were puppets. Everyone wanted to join the fun and dance along. But Marie was enthralled by the Nutcracker her uncle had placed under the tree. He looks like a real boy, she mused, who has traveled from a faraway place. Partygoers danced and danced the Grand March and the Quadrille and applauded the beautiful music. Those are the parents dancing first to the music. Uncle Drosselmeyer arrived at Marie's side. He placed a hazelnut in the Nutcracker's mouth. Crack! Up came a perfect nut. Marie beamed. What a surprising fellow he is, she thought. It was late when Marie's mother pleaded with her to say good night to the guests, but Marie would not leave the Nutcracker. Fritz, wanting to see how he worked, had broken the Nutcracker, and Marie was helping the Nutcracker get better. I guess she was going to glue him back together. When the house was silent, Marie lay awake in her bed. I better check on the Nutcracker, she thought. She tiptoed past Uncle Drosselmeyer's old carved clock with the watchful owl on top. It wasn't a real owl. It was a wooden owl. In the eerie light, Marie felt odd. As the old clock chimed 12, she seemed to be getting smaller, or else everything around her was growing bigger. Strange sounds were coming from inside the walls. Scritchy, scratchy, squeak! Scritchy, scratchy, squeak! Then Marie saw a mouse as bold as brass who wore a glittery crown. Slowly, the old gilded cabin holding Uncle's wonderful gifts from other times creaked open. The figures inside moved as if waking up, and Marie heard the sounds of mice gathering at her backs. Fritz's toy soldiers were mustering forces. Then a strong, clear voice called, "We will not stand for any mouse invasion or their wicked king." It was the Nutcracker, now a boy, on his feet and on the move. It was a ferocious battle. The Nutcracker jumped into the thick of it. Crack! Soldiers marched and the mice pounced. Then the Mouse King leaped upon the Nutcracker. Brave Marie reached for her slipper, took an exacting aim, and toppled that wicked Mouse King in one blow. The Nutcracker was saved. The battle was won, and the wicked Mouse King was vanquished. The soldiers formed a hero's arch for Marie and for the Nutcracker. At the end of the arch, Marie whispered, "What is this?" For inside the cabinet, the door to the gingerbread house was open. A sleigh was waiting for them, and Marie and the Nutcracker stepped in. A wintry figure, all in white, beckoned them forward as she danced among the snowflakes. The sleigh glided through a dreamland of icicles until they heard lively music, molto vivace, which means very fast. All this lively music playing, dancing bears performed the Russian trepak. That's a type of very fast dance from Russia. All thoughts of the battle and the Mouse King disappeared as the music reached their ears and then their hearts, down to their very toes. They leaped higher and higher until the one with a twinkle in his eye lifted Marie skyward before gently placing her into the sleigh. Next, they were gliding through a wood. The wintry lady escorted them to a sparkling clearing where two elegant foxes performed the danse arabe. That's another dance in the ballet. In other words, their Arabian dance, their foxtails entwining. Marie, standing on her toes, imagined the handsome fox spinning her as part of the dance. When the foxes bowed towards the lady and the Nutcracker applauded, Marie exclaimed, "She must be the princess of the snowy land." As the sleigh followed the snow princess, the treetops suddenly exploded. A large creature careened through them, sprinkling the woodland with dazzling snow crystals. The dragon's breath was harumphing out in song, harumph, humph, 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 humph. With great fanfare, two flying squirrels leaped off the back of the dragon and invited Marie and the Nutcracker for a cup of tea from their samovar. Samovar is a big teapot set on little legs over a little bit of a fire, and that keeps the tea warm. And everybody could always drink warm tea because this big, enormous teapot had a little spout, and you could turn on this little faucet and get tea right from the faucet, just like in water from a sink. As the sky grew the color of a sugar plum and the snow became many shades of blue, hundreds of tiny flames appeared, and lanterns illuminated the path. Antlered friends playing flutes led them towards a gingerbread house. There are some moose playing flutes. They sort of look funny, but they are playing flutes. The Nutcracker smiled at Marie, his eyes happy and sad at the same time, like the music. Are we heading back home already? Asked Marie. Not quite yet, whispered the snow princess. They peeked through the gingerbread house at windows at bouquets of spring flowers, swooping and twirling into a waltz. But they also saw bustling prickles. I thought hedgehogs slept through the winter, Marie laughed. You just have to find their gingerbread palace to see them, answered the Nutcracker. And there are all these little hedgehogs with all the needles, and their needles are covered with flowers, so they look like little dancing flower pots. The Snow Princess smiled. We have an even bigger treat ready for you. The gingerbread house doors opened. The animal orchestra performed the waltz of the flowers. Candy cane elves and fairies dance for the Nutcracker to celebrate his bravery in standing up to the wicked mice. Mother Ginger, which is a big old hen, and her chickens thank Marie for throwing the slipper that changed the course of the battle. The Celesta's twinkling notes and the whirling dance made Marie's imagination take flight for what seemed like hours. As her eyelids and the Nutcrackers grew heavy, the doors to the old cabinet creaked open and beckoned them back to Marie's home. The next day, Marie was happy to wake up to her mother's loving face and Fritz's mischievous smile. Her Nutcracker was by her side, and almost everything was as before. But from that day forward, even when she was all grown up, if she heard the Celesta, which is a high tinkling musical instrument that is in the orchestra, she felt she and the Nutcracker were back in the land of the Snow Princess once more. That is the end of the Nutcracker. Now I'm going to read A Visit from St. Nicholas, which is a very important poem for Christmas that is exactly 100 years old this year. It was written in 1823, and the author is Clement Clark Moore. And we better know this poem as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. So because Christmas is coming up, let's read it again. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their heads while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. And away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes did appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment he must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As leave that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a window, and then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up in a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." And that is, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And now we're going to read another very famous Christmas story, which many of you might know already, is How the Grinch Stole Christmas by Dr. Seuss. Every who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot, but the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. That Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. Now please don't ask why, no one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were just too tight. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve, hating the Whos, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm lighted windows below in their town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now, hanging a mistletoe wreath. "And they're hanging their stockings," he snarled with a sneer. "Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here." Then he growled, with his Grinch fingers nervously drumming, "I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming." For tomorrow, he knew, all the Who girls and boys would wake up bright and early. They'd rush for their toys, and then, oh, the noise, oh, the noise, 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 noise. The one thing he hated, that noise, 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 noise. And the Whos, young and old, would sit down to a feast. And they'd feast, and they'd feast, and they'd feast, 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 feast. They would feast on Who pudding and rare Who roast beef. Beast, which was something the Grinch could not stand in the least. And then they'd do something he'd like least of all. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together with Christmas bells ringing. They'd stand hand in hand, and the Whos would start singing. They'd sing, and they'd sing, and they'd sing, 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 sing. And the more the Grinch thought of this Who Christmas sing, the more the Grinch thought, "I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming." But how? "I know just what to do," the Grinch laughed in his throat, and he made a quick Santa Claus hat and a coat, and he chuckled and clucked. "What a great Grinchy trick! With this coat and this hat, I look just like Saint Nick. All I need is a reindeer." The Grinch looked around, but since reindeer are scarce, there was none to be found. Did that stop the old Grinch? "No," the Grinch simply said, "if I can't find a reindeer, I'll make one instead." So he called his dog Max. Then he took some red thread, and he tied a big horn on the top of Max's head. Then he loaded some bags on a ramshackle sleigh, and he hitched up old Max. And the Grinch said, "Get up." And the sleigh started down towards the homes where the Whos lay a snooze in their town. All their windows were dark. Quiet snow filled the air. The Whos were all dreaming sweet dreams without care. When he came to the first little house on the square, "This is stop number one," the old Grinchy Claus hissed. And he climbed to the roof, empty bags in his fist. And he slid down the chimney, a rather tight pinch. But if Santa could do it, then so could the Grinch. He got stuck only once for a moment or two, and then he stuck his head out of the fireplace flue, were the little hoose stockings all hung in a row. "These stockings," he grinned, "are the first things to go." Then he slithered and slunk, with a smile most unpleasant, around the whole room, and he took every present, pop guns and bicycles, roller skates, drums, checkerboards, tricycles, popcorn, and plums, and he stuffed them in bags. Then the Grinch, very nimbly, stuffed all the bags, one by one, up the chimney. Then he slunk to the icebox. He took the Who's feast. He took the Who pudding. He took the roast beef. He cleaned out that icebox as quick as a flash. Why, that Grinch even took their last can of Who hash. An awful thing to do, huh? Then he stuffed all the food up the chimney with glee. "And now," grinned the Grinch, "I will stuff up the tree." And the Grinch grabbed the tree and he started to shove when he heard a small sound like the coo of a dove. He turned around fast and he saw a small Who, little Cindy Lou Who, who was not more than two. The Grinch had been caught by this tiny Who daughter who'd got out of bed for a cup of cold water. She stared at the Grinch and said, "Santa Claus, why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why?" But you know that old Grinch was so smart and so slick, he thought up a lie, and he thought it up quick. "Why, my sweet little tot, the fake Santa Claus lied. There's a light on this tree that won't light on one side. So I'm taking it home to my workshop, my dear. I'll fix it up there, and I'll bring it back here." And his fib fooled the child. Then he patted her head, he got her a drink, and sent her to bed. And when Cindy Lou Who climbed to the bed with her cup, he went down up the chimney and snuffed the tree up. Then the last thing he took was the log for their fire. Then he went up the chimney himself, that old liar. On their walls he left nothing but hooks and some wire, and the one speck of food that he left in the house was a crumb that was even too small for a mouse. It had been really small, didn't it? Then he did the same thing with the other Who houses, leaving crumbs much too small for the other Who's mouses. It was quarter past dawn, and all the Who's still abed, all the Who's still a snooze when he packed up his sled, packed it up with their presents, the ribbons, the wrappings, the tags and the tinsel, the trimmings, the trappings. Everything. 3,000 feet up the side of Mount Crumpet, he rose with his load to the top, tip-top to dump it. "Pooh, pooh to the Who's," he was grinchishly humming. "They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouth will hang open for a minute or two. Then the Who's down in Whoville will all cry, 'Woo-hoo!'" "That's a noise," grinned the Grinch, "that I simply must hear." So he paused, and the Grinch put his hand to his ear, and he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started low and then started to grow. But the sound wasn't sad. Why, the sound sounded merry. It couldn't be so, but it was merry, very. He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes, then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, were singing without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his loads through the bright morning light, and he brought back the toys and the food for the feast, and he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beef. And there is the Grinch, sitting with all the other Whos in Whoville, about to have a very Merry Christmas, all of them together. And that's the end of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. But he gave it back, didn't he? And he found it was a really good place to be with all the other Whos. And now, here's a very famous Christmas song, which I'm not going to sing, but I'm going to read you the words. And you probably know these already. So here we go. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know Dancer, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, "Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?" Then how the reindeer loved him. As they shouted out with glee, "Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you'll go down in history." Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. And that's the end of the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer song. That was always a favorite of mine when I was growing up. And now, for a very few, not really Christmas poems, but just let's see what we got here. These are about chickens. Hickledy Pickledy, my black hen, she lays eggs for gentlemen, sometimes 9 and sometimes 10. Hickledy Pickledy, my black hen. And another one. Cluck, 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 cluck. "Good morning, Mrs. Hen. How many chickens have you got?" "Madam, I've got 10. 4 of them are yellow, and 4 of them are brown, and 2 of them are speckled red, the nicest in the town." And here's another one. "I had a little hen, the prettiest ever seen. She washed up the dishes and kept the house all clean. She went to the mill to fetch me some flour and always got home in less than an hour." And I'm afraid we've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time for the Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For more information about NCRS, visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Read to Succeed on the North Carolina Reading Service.